Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's has served this valley for decades. Customer service means everything to them. Personal insurance, commercial business insurance, whatever. They'll find you the best insurance at the right price. And if there's a claim, they jump right in. They are your advocate. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. They are the best in the business. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Keywords, 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Matt Leon in a moment. First, our play-by-play call today. Our old friend Tom Hamilton with a call on the Indians radio network, as only he can do it.
Slung and grounded up the middle by the diving Andrews. Base hit center field. Encarnacion scores. Here comes Santana. The Indians have the lead. What a comeback.
Tom Hamilton with a call on the Indians radio network. Now, that's a play-by-play call of the day. Right there. All right. We always want to keep everybody up to date on what's going on with Philadelphia. And, of course, we are your station for the Philadelphia Phillies. They are at Seattle tonight at Safeco at 10:10. 9:35 is the airtime tonight on WKOK. Let's bring in Matt Leon. Matt, welcome back. Great to have you with us, sir.
Great to be with you.
What's the excitement level now that it's a reality that it's a trio of Fultz, Simmons, and Embiid?
Well, you can't get a season ticket. They're basically sold out. That should tell you everything you need to know for a team that's won, what, 60 games over the last 4 years?
Yeah. That's amazing. That's an amazing level of excitement.
Yeah, no, it's palpable. It really is. You could feel it building. You got spurts of it last year when Embiid was on the floor, and now with everything, people just, I think they want to wrap everyone in bubble wrap until opening night just to make sure that the whole group gets to the finish line.
Yeah. There's also something else. They also signed a couple of free agents that have Big Ten roots. They signed Melo Trimble as a free agent. They signed James Blackman of Indiana as a free agent as well. So at least they've been aggressive in that area too.
Yeah, and it'll be tough for those guys because I think they're going to have to – it'll be interesting to see with veteran free agency if they go and get one or two guys. I don't mean, you know, top shelf max contract guys, but they need, right. I think, a couple of steadying veterans on this roster. I think they'll be active here the rest of the summer, and it'll be interesting to see what direction they go. But the talent level is about as high as it's been in a long time. It is exciting to get ready for.
What did you think of how the entire draft played out in the NBA itself?
I thought it was interesting. A lot of deals. It's so hard to project some of these guys because you're not only trying to project what they are, but you're also trying to project the situations they are going into. I think, like a lot of people, I'm very interested to see how Lonzo Ball works out in Los Angeles. Next to the Sixers, that's probably the development I am most interested in seeing how it works here short and long term.
All right. We talked a lot earlier about the Phillies, a subject we avoided last week.
Yeah.
As excited as the fan base in Philadelphia is about the Sixers, where are they now in the Phillies?
They are just waiting for the call-ups from AAA, really. And I think most people would have done it yesterday if it was up to them. You're really kind of, because the Phillies are bad and boring, and that's a bad combination.
It is not good.
Yeah, and It's unusual because they're bad and they're boring and they're relatively young. They're not as young as some people would lead you to believe, but when you've got this many young guys in the lineup, usually there is a certain level of excitement that goes along with every game.
Right.
That's been, for the most part, sucked out of it as of late. The last 2 months have just been absolutely brutal. I mean, they're 24-50, which is eye-popping bad when you look at it. But then consider, they started 11-9. So that is 13-41 over their last 54 games. And if you want to go even a little further, they had a four-game winning streak in the middle of that. So that is a lot of losing day to day to day. And they just do what bad teams do. On the few nights they hit, they don't pitch. When they do pitch well, they can't get the big hit. When the starting pitching is great, the bullpen implodes. When the starting pitching is terrible, then you get seven shutout innings from the bullpen. It's, you know, it's all classic what happens when things go bad for a bad team. And this is incredibly disappointing. I honestly thought this was a team that could flirt with 500. I thought this was a team that could get to 80, 81 wins, and it would just be a fun summer of enjoying baseball, watching players get better. But it has gone, it has not only been worst-case scenario in the overarching sense, it's been worst-case scenario in every aspect of the team. If you go position by position, area by area, it's really been disappointing.
Yeah, and that, what's interesting is that there are some parts of the minor league situation at Triple A, let's go to Triple A, that are exciting. I think Rhys Hoskins has a chance to be a long-term solution at first base. And then there's J.P. Crawford, and Roman Quinn's out again. He's out 6 weeks.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's interesting. You look at Roman Quinn. He's never played triple-figure games in the minor leagues.
No.
Because he's constantly hurt. When he's healthy, and we saw a glimpse of this when he came up last year, you know, he's the guy that turns your head out there on the field. I mean, Hoskins will be up here soon. I don't think it's crazy to think that they might move Tommy Joseph at the deadline. He's been pretty effective. A lot of his numbers are sagged down a little bit from a terrible April. He and Aaron Altair have probably been the most consistent hitters the last couple of months. So if they were to move on from Joseph at first base, then you would see Hoskins. I think you'll see Nick Williams up here soon. They did promote a kid named Cameron Perkins, who
yep.
isn't one of their top shelf prospects, but
I like him though.
From Triple. Yeah,
yeah. I liked him when he was at Williamsport. I thought this guy is—he doesn't do anything spectacular, but he does a lot of things well.
Yeah, and I think on a good team, he is a great fourth outfielder.
Yes.
He can play all three positions, can run a little bit, but he's struggled, and I'm not going to, I mean, it's 20 at bats, so you don't want to, you know, make any kind of a judgment, but he's struggled since they've called him up. But I think you'll see a Nick Williams. You might see a J.P. Crawford at the end of the year if he can get hot. He's really struggled at the plate. I mean, he's a candidate for a September call-up, but as far as guys that, you know, we could see here in the next month or so by the time the trade deadline, which I think will be key when they kind of open up some spots, spinning a couple of veterans, I think Nick Williams will be at the front of that line, and I think Rhys Hoskins will be at the front of that line as well.
What has this done for the fan base, though? Because there were a lot of people said, you know, they could be, I mean, I thought they'd be a 75-win team. Right, that's what I thought they would be, but you know what, that would be an improvement. So, what's the attitude of the fans right now? Because right now they're treading water and they're not going anywhere with it.
Yeah, I think the attitude right now is frustration because a lot of these games it's the same thing over and over again. You know, they can't get the big hit, or the bullpen, you know, blows another winnable game, or the bullpen turns a close game into a blowout. Right now it is frustration, but I think the arrow for the time being is slowly drifting from frustration to apathy. But that being said, I think a couple of these big time prospects get called up and all of a sudden you'll have people kind of snap back and get interested again. It's just, frankly, from a day to day, it's just hard to watch,
yeah.
You know, for the most part. I will say it's gotten better the last couple weeks because the starting pitching has rebounded to where you're getting a pretty kind of what we thought, you know, when we talked back in March and April. You thought you were going to get a workmanlike effort every night. You were going to get a starting pitching effort that was going to keep you in the game, and you hoped to get a couple of big hits and the bullpen be able to close it down. You know, obviously the last two parts haven't happened. But lately, with Aaron Nola rounding into the form we saw when he first came up a couple years ago, Nick Pivetta has been very good at the couple of starts. You're seeing the ability that seemed to click at AAA now. Maybe he's starting to settle in. You know, Jeremy Hellickson has rebounded the last couple of starts after kind of being out of whack there for a while. And, you know, he has pitched really well, and that's good news if you're talking about maybe a trade deadline. And Ben Lively, who struggled Saturday, even though he had a home run in the loss to Arizona, a kid they called up about a month ago, has done a nice job. He had his first four starts were all quality starts. And even on Saturday night, it didn't really fall apart until later in the game, you know, fifth, sixth inning. So, that has helped the fact that the starting pitching has kind of gotten back to even where everybody thought it would be, that making the games here more competitive. But they've got multiple issues in the back of the bullpen, and they just don't score enough. They don't put enough guys on base. When they do, they can't get the big hit. They don't have an exceptional amount of speed, and they don't run the base as well. You put all that together, and that's a tough way to live.
Well, you've just depressed all the passengers. All right. thanks so much, Matt. Appreciate it.
Talk to you next time.
Matt Leon from KYW Philadelphia. We'll come back. A lot more to talk about on the show today. Number open at 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565. How do you feel about whether or not sports gambling should be legal in New Jersey? It's not that far of a trip. So how do you feel about even legalizing sports gambling in this state? How do you feel about that? I'd like to know. 800-795-9565. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Welcome back. Great to have you with us on the show. A big victory for the state of New Jersey today, because their case can now go to the Supreme Court. They have lost literally at every level. Every level New Jersey has lost at. And then this comes up. The Supreme Court's going to hear their sports betting appeal. So the question is, do they settle this thing before they get there? New Jersey has an extremely long losing streak in court. This goes back 5 years where they've lost. And it was interesting, Donald Trump, of course, has casinos. I mean, obviously, I was at a banquet one time where Al McGuire spoke, and it was at Trump's Taj Mahal in Atlantic City. Yet, the Trump administration has given very mixed messages on sports gambling. Very mixed messages. And, of course, Chris Christie, who's been a major Donald Trump supporter, was asked on CBS Radio recently if he believed that the administration, that he believes actually the administration was against gambling. I mean, obviously, they're the ones who are going to have to. I mean, the league is going to be out there. The leagues are out there and have been against it. But here's what's interesting. The NHL is a part of the no sports gaming in New Jersey. Okay, they're part of it. But other than that, they've done nothing and they have not said a word about it. The NCAA and the NFL have been adamant about being publicly opposed to expanding legal sports betting in the U.S. All right, so the NHL's been quiet about it, but their name is attached to it, the NFL and the NCAA have been publicly opposed and adamant about it. And, of course, the NFL is the same league that said, I think we'll put the Raiders in Las Vegas. Okay. Meanwhile, five different conferences in college basketball held their tournaments, postseason tournaments in Las Vegas. Now, it doesn't mean you're giving a thumbs up or a thumbs down to sports gambling, but it also means that you know, it's not a mystery as to why you put the tournament there either. Trying to put it at a destination place, and people do like to go to Las Vegas. Adam Silver wrote the very interesting op-ed in the New York Times, which I went into extensively. It was an op-ed that called for a federal framework, not state by state, but a federal framework to legalize sports betting in the country. Now, the NBA has remained, along with the NHL, which has been quiet. Again, the NHL is still a plaintiff. The NBA is still a plaintiff. So is Major League Baseball, along with the NFL and the NCAA. They're all plaintiffs in the Jersey case. But Silver believes that if you have a federal framework, he thinks that's a far more prudent approach than doing a state-by-state thing where it's patchwork across the country. If you make it uniform, he thinks it has a chance to work. Major League Baseball seems to be sliding toward Silver's position. Rob Manfred seems to be sliding toward Silver's position on a federal framework for this. And, of course, we know that sports leagues are increasingly partnering with the data dissemination firms that, of course, are used for gambling purposes overseas. Individual team owners, as well as leagues, the NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, they've all invested in the daily fantasy companies like DraftKings and FanDuel. I mean, they made no secret about it. Now, why does New Jersey want to do this? New Jersey wants to do this because they want the revenue. All right, it's just like there's no other purpose for this. You know, there's no other purpose for this but to get the revenue. Okay, they think this is the way to do it. Now, look, money's going to be the entire answer here. And part of the money question may be, what do the leagues get out of any kind of arrangement in New Jersey-sponsored sports gambling? What do the leagues get out of it financially? That's a key question for them. Remember, if the leagues think they can get some cash out of it, they will suddenly sit down and say, let's talk, what can we do? I mean, just like, why is the state going after this? State is not going after it, just like the state of Washington and the state of Colorado when it came to marijuana legalization, right? They didn't do it because, well, you know, we just think it's the right thing to do. They did it for the money. Hey, they did it for the tax revenue. That's the only reason they did it. And anybody that tells you differently is lying to your face. Right? That's why any of these state entities, anything that they do is for one reason and one reason only. They're trying to figure out a way to get more cash. How do we get more cash? No, this is one way you do it. They're trying to look for whatever way they can to get it. This happens to be one of them. Again, if anybody tells you, oh, well, no, the reason we're doing it, and they give you some high-minded answer, you look at them, you're doing it for the cash, okay? I mean, not to be cynical here, but been around the block a few times. You know, you can fool the stupid people all you want. Everybody else can sit there and go, I know why you're doing this. Now, in the end, is it something you want to do? Maybe something you very well would do. Again, that's your choice, your money. I mean, it's your money. So if you would like to bet it on the Phillies game tonight, I didn't say you had to be smart with your money. But it is yours. By the way, they play the Mariners tonight at 10:10. So, yeah. The digital era is an interesting one. Today, Fox Sports laid off all their writers. Including a good friend of ours, Dieter Kurtenbach.
Yeah, he was awesome with us last year. He was courtside of the NBA Finals.
Yeah. We're going to try and get him on, not just to talk about this, but other things. Because he obviously has his finger on the pulse of the NBA. It's rough business out there. They're eliminating most of their online writing staff. They're going to focus on video production.
Imagine getting behind the wheel and looking forward to your journey ahead. If when you turned your car on, it did the same for you. Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury has the full 2017 Lincoln lineup ready to invigorate your driving experience with affordable American luxury. Well-qualified buyers can take advantage of $4,000 cash back and 0% for 72 months on the luxurious 2017 Lincoln Navigator. Or lease a new 2017 Lincoln MKX all-wheel drive for $363 per month for 36 months. Sunbury Motors Lincoln is your destination for affordable American luxury. Located in Sunbury in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and online at sunburylincoln.com. Financing with Lincoln AFS with approved credit. Lease based on stock number LB738, 10,000 miles per year and $3,900 total due at signing. Zero security deposit, tax and fees extra.
Offer ends 7577.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I'm trying to absorb how profound that was. You appear to be stunned.
A little different.
A little. A little? Yeah, different's a good word. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. They are the best in the business. You need to have a great insurance agent, and they will take care of a wide variety of insurance needs. Wide. And they are the best in the business. The pros in insurance. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors. Talk about the best in the business. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports Bozo of the Day is a delusional Vince Young. Young did make the Pro Bowl twice in his career. His rookie year, I mean, he was a replacement player. Then he was the league's comeback player of the year in 2009. He had a couple of injuries. He had problems with Jeff Fisher. But it's like he blames everybody for his problems except for himself. And then he makes this delusional statement. And remember, he had also had more interceptions than touchdown passes in his career. That usually is a bad recipe in the National Football League. He says there's only one person on the planet that can really relate to what he's gone through. He said that's Tiger Woods. I'm standing there like, what the heck is he talking about? Tiger Woods was the number one guy in his sport from 1997 through minimum 2008, and you could even argue 2013, because he did win five times in 2013. Vince Young was a great college player, who was a good college player in three, a good college player in four, a great one in five, and no better than an okay pro. I mean, let me tell you a quick story about Vince Young. A friend of mine worked the Heisman Trophy ceremony in December 2005. And he came back and he says, man, I got to tell you what I saw there. I said, sure. And that's the one where Reggie Bush won and Vince Young finished second. So they go in there. They're all sitting there. They announce Reggie Bush the winner. And Bill tells me, he says, hey, look, this is, he says, they just, you know, everybody, you know, very polite, respectful applause, the whole thing. Bush makes a speech. They're all sitting there. The second the cameras went off, all right, Young bolts up, right, goes over, gets his entourage. This is the word Bill used his gets his entourage, and they march out of there. And he said, watch out, he's going to have a huge Rose Bowl against USC, which he did, because he's determined to show everybody's wrong. I said, Bill, entourage? I said, what's a college player of entourage for? He says, Steve, he said, there were a lot of people in that group. A lot of people. Wow. That gave me a bad feeling about what was going on. Entourage. So, Norm Chow said in the article written by Greg Bishop of SI.com, and by the way, Vince Young liked Norm Chow, and we know Norm Chow's a very good offensive mind. He said he liked Vince Young but also found him to be immature. One day he'd sit up front in meetings, hand raised, asking questions. The next day he'd sit in the back, a baseball cap pulled low over his eyes. Once Chow and Kerry Collins teased Young about his surly demeanor. In response, Young reminded them that he was the only guy in this room with the owner's phone number. Chow said obviously he had been spoiled. He wasn't willing to put in that extra study that sets quarterbacks apart. He didn't lean on Kerry Collins, who had been around the block and had been to the Super Bowl. He wasn't a bad guy. Heck, he was 23 years old. He was pampered, coddled, whatever word you want to use. They asked Young about his relationship with Jeff Fisher. He says, I don't want to get into it. I'm saving that for my book. I will freely admit that is a book I will not buy. I really don't care. If you're a University of Texas fan, you care a lot and you're going to read it. There's no question about it. I'm sitting there going, look. Remember, when Young couldn't play, Kerry Collins stepped in and they went 13-3. That tells me something. Look, in the pro game, it doesn't hurt that you have mobility. Look at Steve Young had great mobility, but he could throw, and he was accurate when he threw. Brett Favre can run, but he was accurate when he threw. Vince Young has that Chariots of Fire motion, where the safeties are like going, come on, right here, Vince, I'm looking right at you, man. All right. We talked about the Phillies last half hour. Let's get Chris Mack from the Pirates Radio Network on. Chris, welcome back. Great to have you on board, as always.
That's good, because I usually get blamed for everything at home, so it evens out.
Good. That means we're all even in that score. All right. Being in a division that is not the best division in baseball, how much is that now helping in what the Pirates are trying to do?
Well, I think it's huge. I mean, if they were in just about any other division in baseball, they'd be, you know, 10, 12, 20 games back. Yeah. So, you know, being in the Central in a year where the Central is mediocre at best is a great spot for them, because it's buying them time. I mean, we're almost 80 games in now, but it buys them some more time to tread water along with the rest of the division, stay close, stay within four or five games at the top of that division, and then this goes for anybody, really, Pirates, Cubs, even the Cardinals,
right.
Stay within a shouting distance of the Brewers at the top and rip off an eight-game winning streak at some point, and that's probably enough to get you right there with them. And then, you know, if that doesn't happen until August or September, so what? You know, it's very much still wide open in this division, and I think that's in large part due to the fact that the Cubs don't have the offense nor the starting pitching they had a year ago. That's got everybody.
July 31st is coming up, Chris, and that's the time when that's the trade deadline. So a lot of people will want to make an acquisition that is going to, you know, really be have an impact and be a positive impact. The Pirates have Starling Marte coming back.
Right.
In other words, they have a built-in impact acquisition. How important can that be for them down the stretch that they're going to get him back?
Well, if he comes in and looks even 80% of what he was the last couple of years, I think it's big because it allows them to lengthen the lineup. Right now, you're talking about a lineup that's almost bottom-heavy because you've got McCutchen and Mercer hitting 6 and 7 every day. And, you know, doesn't sound like that's going to change anytime soon. The holes have been really in the 3 spot and at times in the 4 spot.
Right.
The 3 spot needs to be solved, though. Doesn't sound like it's going to be solved with Andrew McCutchen. They're going to wait for Andrew to decide what he wants to do. If he wants to stay down in the 6th spot, according to Clint Hurdle, at least according to what was said on ESPN Sunday night, they're going to let Andrew make that call. So Marte, when he does get back, if he's playing, like I said, even 3/4 of what he was last year or the year before, really, when he was at his peak, then yeah, he profiles as a guy who can hit second or third in the order, give you a chance to juggle some other things up. I don't know if they'd want to juggle everything or just simply drop him into the third spot, because Frazier and Harrison have worked well at the top. The other question would be, you know, how much more playing time does Adam Frazier get once Marte is back?
Right.
What will be nice is you get him out on a rehab assignment. You're allowed to send him out into minor league games as of July 3rd, I believe it is. So, really, a little more than a week away. He gets to go out, play some baseball, hopefully at least get up to speed somewhat. I mean, it's not major league speed, but, you know, get some reps under him. And then the 18th, he's eligible to come back. And that's a full, almost a full 2 weeks before the deadline.
Right.
So does that help you assess as well what you may or may not need? I don't think the Pirates are going to go big in either direction. I really don't, Steve. I think, you know, I think Andrew McCutchen
Chris,
is here
Chris,
until the end of...
Chris, I think getting him back is the going big part.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess my what I mean by going big...
No, I know what you mean.
Going out and going after someone, or shedding someone. You know, I don't think that's going to happen either. I think you may see some shuffling in the bullpen because it's been mediocre at best and terrible at worst. I mean, if you go back and just look at the month of June, which I did last night, they have at least 5 ball games between Tony Watson's blown saves and Ocasio blow-up on the Friday night against the Cubs at PNC Park. They've got at least 5 ball games that they probably should have won. They should have gone 7-3 or 8-2 on this 10-game stretch against the Central, but they had multiple games that were blown up by the bullpen. If they don't lose those games, they're right there with the Brewers at the top of the division. Now, ifs and buts and candy and nuts and all that, but the point is, this is not, I heard someone earlier today say, Clint Hurdle has to realize he doesn't have a very good ball club. I think this is a pretty good ball club right now. It's just got a bad bullpen problem. It's got Felipe Rivero and not much else you trust. And that's where the issue comes in. If your starter is not going to go at least 6, and we've seen how well they can do when their starter gets them at least 6 innings, if they don't have to MacGyver the bullpen from the 5th to the 9th,
right,
then they're a pretty good ball club. They are, at least in this division anyway. The record doesn't say so, but the record would be much better if this bullpen had played even half as well as it was expected to coming into the season. So that's where I would expect maybe some little tweaks or some little moves as far as the bullpen goes. And then to your point, you get Marte back. So that helps sustain the offense. If the offense does anything like it did in June and July and August, then they got no problems at all. Pot five offense in the month of June. So that's the question. What do you do to fix the bullpen, really, is the biggest issue facing this club right now.
Yeah, and that is a huge issue because, I'm sure that the natural thing is to take a guy like Watson, who's been just great as the eighth inning guy for years, and you bump him up and you move him to the closer's role. Not everybody's made for that role. Why wasn't Tony made for that role? Why is he more of a setup guy than a closer?
You know, I think it's just a mentality thing. Jack Cirencic, who used to be the general manager of the Seattle Mariners, he's my co-host on the pre- and post-game shows now, really believes in the fact that there is a certain mindset that a guy has to have to pitch the ninth. And I, so many of us who look at statistics to judge what a player is doing and what a player may be capable of doing, you can't statistically judge a guy's makeup. You can look at Juan Nicasio, for example, over the first 2 months of the season and say, oh, well, Juan Nicasio is right there with Felipe Rivero numbers-wise. He's done this and he's done that, and then high leverage and low leverage. And then you put him in there, in that situation, and he blows up. You know, for Tony Watson, I think it's a matter of some of it was stuff. Tony Watson has good stuff. I don't think he has the kind of stuff. Watch Felipe Rivero pitch and watch Tony Watson pitch.
Right.
And tell me which one of those two guys. Just look at the numbers on StatCast. You know, look at the 103s that pop up occasionally from Rivero. At the very least, 99 and a 92-mile-an-hour changeup. That's closer stuff. That's the kind of stuff that you can gas out for an inning and shut down a ball game. Whereas Watson, it comes in and it's not the same impact. I agree with you. He's one of the best eighth inning guys for a long time in baseball. But I think that move to the closer's role and being unsuccessful in it has messed with his mental side of the game as well. Daniel Hudson looked like he was starting to come back around for 3 to 4 weeks there. He gives up the lead with home runs on back, you know, two out of three ball games this weekend. So they've got veteran guys who simply can't fill the roles that they need filled right now. That's why I wonder, you know, if there are moves to be made in that bullpen that may include guys like Watson or Hudson, even, who just signed a contract this offseason. They've got to figure out what direction they want to go with this bullpen. I know Clint Hurdle prefers veterans. That's why Edgar Santana hasn't really gotten any high leverage spots yet. Rookie they just caught up from Indy about a month ago. But, you know, he's a guy with electric stuff who also is just sort of blindly confident. He's only been playing baseball for like 6 years. He walks in there and he starts throwing 98, and everybody's like, okay, well, we can deal with that. So I don't know if it's a quick fix, unfortunately.
Because of other circumstances like the NBA Finals and things like that going on, I really felt like the Jameson Taillon comeback has been really underplayed nationally. What has it meant to that clubhouse that he's been able to get back?
It's almost, I still don't know if it's even set in the clubhouse, Steve. It's because of the way, because of Jameson's makeup, I don't know if it's even been the same story in the clubhouse that you would think it would be. You know, guy beats cancer in a few weeks and comes back to pitch again. But I think, you know, everyone's so used, every time you ask someone about Jameson, the response is, yeah, I mean, the guy's just got the mental fortitude to fight off anything. He fights off Tommy John surgery. He fights off the hernia surgery. And now he's fighting off this and performing at the major league level. I don't know if it's really going to hit anybody until they look back on the body of work that he puts together this season. I think everyone's going to go, oh, what, you mean that guy did that? You know, he was back on the mound 3 weeks after surgery for testicular cancer. You're kidding me?
Yeah.
And it really, you're right. It feels like it has, you know, they've done a decent job on the ESPN broadcast and the Fox broadcast, the national games, of bringing it up. But you're right. It almost feels like it's, just Jameson Taillon being extraordinary again.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when John Lester came back, it was a huge, huge deal.
Thought, right.
Well,
right.
You know, well, guess what? This is a huge, huge deal. And I figured ESPN would make an even bigger deal of it because this is what got Jim Valvano.
Right.
So, oh, well, that's If it was an NBA player, maybe they'd talk more about it. All right. Okay.
I think Jameis is perfectly fine.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is.
Funny.
I'm sure.
Not that he doesn't want to be a spokesman for early detection and awareness, because that's something I know he wants to move forward with. But he's one of those guys that not that he's going to shirk media responsibilities, but he's perfectly fine to just sit there at his locker stall and somebody
pitch.
Wants to talk about it, cool.
And pitch.
Yeah, and pitch, exactly.
Right, and I don't blame him. He just wants to pitch, and it's probably, because, that stuff, if it goes in a certain way, it can become overwhelming for you, too.
Sure, sure.
Chris, always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
Chris Mack on the Pirates Radio Network. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. All right, great to have you with us. Yeah, Fox Sports. And this follows to a point what ESPN was doing. Fox Sports is going to remodel its online operations. They're cutting back the bulk of the writing staff. They're going to focus on video. 20 writing and editing positions eliminated, including our friend Dieter Kurtenbach, who brilliantly covered the NBA. They'll be replaced by a similar number of jobs, but they focus on video production. Fox is now looking to create separate online videos to complement shows, and they want to aim the web video content that can go viral over social media platforms. So that's what they're doing. They're already veered away from breaking news on the TV side, canceling their nightly news show back in February, and they've gone for personality-based arguing with people like Colin Cowherd and Skip Bayless and so forth on opinion shows. Now, ESPN did this appointment. You notice that, there may be the SportsCenter anchor that you know and enjoyed that may have been released, but they really took an axe, ESPN did, to the writing side of it. And look at all the great writers they let go. I think there has to be a combination of both. Excellent reporting, great writers. Those who are connected are invaluable resources. They're in it every day. I know they are, but still. That's just the old-timer view of me. Doesn't light me up too much. It's a tough industry to be in, that's for sure. Very tough. No show tomorrow. We've got the Phillies and the Mariners. We're back on Thursday.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.